Welcome to the Sustainability Podcast's newest series, America's Path to Net Zero. This series is dedicated to the investment made by the U.S. in the pursuit of a net zero emissions and a greener tomorrow. In the next four episodes, I will be covering emerging industries, established technologies, future policies, and the impact of the Inflation Reduction Act. The featured guests include ARC's finest analyst and the founder of the American Energy Society. I hope this series leaves you with a better understanding of the Inflation Reduction Act, emerging decarbonization technologies, and your role in the energy transition. All right. Eric, good morning. How are you doing today?
Doing well. Thank you, Gavin. Good to see you again.
Nice to see you as well. Little throwback, Eric and I first met at the SIZE conference in summer of 2020. It was a virtual conference. As a young professional, those types of opportunities are invaluable, and like a classroom won't teach you what the SIZE program taught me. And I guess it kind of leads into it. The program itself just teaches you the importance of connections and teamwork and community building, and it's a great resource to learn how the world really works.
Or at least the energy world on its path to sustainability, right?
100%. So I'm getting really interested in the policy and regulation side of sustainability and clean energy and decarbonization. And I think we both know how it's so important that there's like politics, social science, and economics. And so today I wanted to touch upon the Inflation Reduction Act and America's investment into net zero emissions and decarbonization and clean energy. And we are currently in a monumental time of the Inflation Reduction Act being passed in the U.S., which started out as the blank name act because there was like three or four past drafts. So we finally got a final draft passed, and I just wanted to pick your brain about it today and see what your thought process is and how the American Energy Society plays into the Inflation Reduction Act. So I guess I would like to hear a background on you and how you found yourself in as the founder of the American Energy Society in that story to give us a nice background.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's a lot of good questions there, Gavin. Well, first of all, I like and appreciate your use of the word monumental. It is, without question, partisanship aside, right? It is a monumental policy, and we'll get to that in a second. I think you used the phrase American Energy Society, how it plays into. I think it's appropriate for me to say that American Energy Society, we're nonpartisan, sector agnostic. We don't play favorites. We don't lobby ever. We are an independent professional association entirely accountable and only solely accountable to our members and audience. So we try to facilitate their access to new information, access to each other, access to services or anything that they need professionally. So we are not involved in the policy process. We sit on the sidelines and try to make sense of it for our audience. Let's go back to your word monumental. I think it's safe to say for the last, some people think that this energy transition has been happening for 20 years. It's been a lot longer than that. If you think about the energy trend now, right now and probably for the foreseeable future, our sole goal is, well, not sole, but a primary goal is decarbonization, lowering our emissions. Recently, we've also become more sensitive to very important issues, maybe equally important as justice and fairness and equity along the way. But this energy transition, it seems from my vantage point, it's been going on since the 70s, maybe even earlier, but it was just cast in a different light, and it was the pursuit of energy independence. No one can be energy independent. We are reliant upon the system itself, but it was energy independence with the oil crisis, the OPEC oil crisis of the early 70s. and this a decision to rely less on the oil producing countries, primarily in the Middle East. So this transition has been going on for quite some time. It seems to me, and I'll go back to the monumental aspect, we have tried, the United States, to pursue energy independence through politics, but hyper-partisanship tends to divide us, so we don't really ever land on a lasting solution through the democratic process. Not criticizing the democratic process, just not meant to be that way, right? We have tried to encourage or ask capital markets to help us in our pursuit of first energy independence, which they did very effectively because it was profitable. But then decarbonization, not so much because it's not as profitable. So capital markets also weren't successful, as successful as we had hoped. I think more recently we've recognized that the most lasting impact we can make, but it's never, never, ever permanent, is policy. Policy tends to be stickier than democracy or capitalism. It's stickier. It lasts a little bit longer. You set guardrails, right? You set objectives and goals. You create incentives, carrots and sticks, right? Carrots and sticks. Sticks generally don't work, like carbon tax. Doesn't, even though a lot of people, really good thinkers, George Shultz at Stanford and the Hoover Institute, said the only way we're going to do this is through a carbon tax, but Americans don't like tax, right? This most recent IRA was the carrot. This is how we're going to get there, through these financial incentives. So I think it's policy. I think your use of the word monumental was spot on.
Awesome. Well, thank you. So the American Energy Society, is it a publication? Are you posting and sharing stories and articles and blogs? Am I?
We're an independent professional association, so we're a collection of energy professionals and okay, people who are interested in energy, right, and sustainability. We do believe in deep decarbonization, but we try to play fairly with everybody in the sandbox, so to speak. So we're a professional association. We have short form publications, long form publications, reports, data sets, services for students and early career professionals, late career, industry, policy, investors. We have about 135,000 individual engagers, so it's quite large.
I wanted to ask you more on the publication side of things, is why is storytelling important currently and to the clean energy transition, and why is it important, and do you think the current administration has been doing a good job at communicating the IRA?
Remind me to come back to that second point question if I forget. Storytelling. Interesting. Storytelling has its own blessing and curse. Like I said, for the longest time, we've been going through an energy transition, but it hasn't really resonated with the popular audiences, right? I mean, I'm an old guy, you're not, but Gavin, you might laugh at this one. In the early 70s, one way to enhance or facilitate energy efficiency, get this, you ready, Gavin? I hope you're sitting down. One way to enhance energy efficiency was the speed limit on freeways was reduced to 55. So that was the fastest you could ever go. Not 65, not 70, but 55. I don't know about Florida, but California, Houston, can you imagine 55? Can you imagine?
Right.
Try driving on a freeway or an interstate 55 and see how that feels. Well, there was no storytelling around that. It was with an iron fist. They said, this is what we're going to do. We got to cut fuel use consumption. 55. Well, there was a big I can't drive 55 campaign. That didn't last. That wasn't sticky, right? It was a policy, a stick policy, not a carrot policy, and it didn't last. And I think we kept trying to do that sort of approach, like banging your head against the wall. Why won't the people embrace these really smart policies? Storytelling is an act of humanizing something, right? Making it resonate in a way for people, so it makes it more personal. That's great, right? We need that. We need to be able to talk to people. We haven't done that very well for a very, very long time. The problem with that is storytelling is a form of marketing. It is a form of marketing. It's how to tell your story in a way that people buy into, right? If you rephrase it and rethink about it, or think about it as a method of marketing, as a more contemporary method of marketing, if I told you, Gavin, I'm going to give you some marketing speak, you're probably going to be skeptical. You're probably right. Going to be doubt its authenticity, right? So we do need storytelling, but there is also a need for thoughtful review of information, data-driven, thoughtful, verifiable evidence, that sort of thing. That's where we try to come in. That's where American Energy said, we try to pull back from the storytelling to try to just give you the information. As far as your second part of your question, this administration, I can't speak and probably shouldn't speak because I'm not qualified to speak to its ability to storytell as an administration. I don't know how it's doing outside of energy policy. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if I'm qualified to speak to its current storytelling methods. I think that the strength of an embrace of the IRA, honestly, is because it's a good policy, or at least it's an effective, good in the terms of effective, right? It massive incentives for a lot of different interests, massive. Yeah. And much of the money had initially was distributed to what we'll call purple states or red states. I mean, Georgia's become a battery center. Georgia, it's always had phenomenal leadership from like Georgia Tech. But mm-hmm. now all of a sudden there's public money to support this, right? Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, things are happening in, I hate the phrase, but purple states. I think it's good policy in terms of its embrace of a wider audience. And then the storytelling becomes easy, right? If people want to hear your story, that's easy.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think what I was trying to get at there is communicating the IRA is a huge problem. And I feel like a part of the issue with acceptance of the IRA and clean energy related bills, or even just clean energy or climate change headlines, is people cannot digest the information that they're being shown. And it's a huge roadblock for people to understand it and be comfortable with the information that they're reading, because a lot of people get overstimulated or just they get a little stressed out when they don't understand it. And so I wanted to just basically like see if you think that the current administration was communicating in a digestible way that more people would be able to take advantage of the packages within the IRA.
No question. It's hard. I mean, what the third or fourth iteration of the IRA is 800 pages, right?
Yeah.
They're still trying. The IRS is still issuing rulings about what they classify or consider a tax credit. I mean, it's still unclear. Secretary Granholm has been very busy trying to talk through and talk about the entire cabinet, right, has been very active in terms of talking about it and making sure that their constituencies or their agency is aware of its opportunities. I think they have rallied around that theme of the IRA and the opportunities. I think that that's probably where the storytelling, they all are telling the same story instead of conflicting stories, right? There is opportunity. But Gavin, make no mistake, when you dangle a carrot in the billions and billions and billions of dollars, that's an easy story to tell. It's a lot of money, right? I have a lot easier time telling you a story about how you can make billions as opposed to a few hundred dollars, right? It's go back to your word. What was the word?
Monumental.
You didn't use the word magnificent. What was the word you used?
Monumental.
Monumental. It is that. It is going to be one of the most significant policies of your generation and mine ever, right. Ever. It is monumental. And I think it's because it's billions.
Mm-hmm. Money talks for sure. You were talking about how the clean energy transition and the energy transition has been around for years. Like you said, the 70s, how they were reducing the speed limit to reduce gas consumption. The IRA is monumental and is still in development, and the rollout is going to be for decades to come. I wanted to see...
Maybe. Remember Dr. Martin Luther King's line about policy, right? What can be made can be unmade. Right. He was talking about Jim Crow laws and how we can unmake them. However, it also goes the other direction. This policy, 2024, that's why the Loan Guarantee Office, Jigar Shah's group, is deploy. That's, you know, the old real estate adage and location. Well, they're deploy, get the money out there as quickly as possible. Because it could be undone. Sorry.
No, this is exactly why we're having this conversation. I'm learning here. So I wanted to see, how far do you think the IRA is going to get the U.S. to the goals that we need to achieve? Because the second part of this question is, what future policies would you like to see to get us to the finish line?
Oh, you're not pulling your punch, are you, Gavin? Darn you. Okay. Wow. All right. The first question is the IRA taking us to where we want to go? Is that a fair restatement of that question? I hesitate simply because you couldn't ask a more poignant question. And I don't think, and honestly, Gavin, I think that in all the storytelling, we sometimes forget to ask that very question. It's a brilliant question. Is the IRA taking us to where we want to go? And you know, the infrastructure bill and the CHIPS Act, it's a collection. But I hope we at least recognize that there are other, it's billions and billions and billions through IRA and billions and billions and billions through infrastructure and CHIPS and, you know, all this stuff. So setting this aside, is it taking us to where we want to? Oh, my goodness. Again, we're nonpartisan. From a civics standpoint, as a student of civics, I admire the IRA. I'm not going to comment on my own personal views. You don't want to hear them anyway. The IRA seems, at least right now, to be really doing a good job of helping us generate more energy. I am not so sure or convinced that it's facilitating a transition. It's just facilitating more. We humans have a voracious appetite for energy. More. And with AI and quantum coming, more. Data centers that run 24 hours a day, that need cooling 24 hours a day, more. Everything we build in this transition, for lack of a better word, needs energy, right? It's just more. And I think, and to go back to your comment about storytelling, when you look at, if the storytelling tells the story of a silo, right? I'll use my coffee. A silo. It looks like a silo, right? Offshore wind, hydrogen, you know, silos. We can tell the story. Look at all the money that's in this. Look at all the good we're doing. Look at how much energy offshore wind can produce and will produce. And it will. It's an impressive technology, no doubt. But if you approach it with those blinders and just look at offshore wind, the world looks like an amazing place because it is growing rapidly, or hydrogen as an industrial fuel or whatever, you pick your technology, but so is everybody else. Everybody's growing. Everybody's generating more. Nobody's sitting still, not innovating. Mm-hmm. Every sector is innovating all the time. It's a competitive market, competing against price. So the IRA has incentivized clean energy, and clean energy is growing. Oil production's up. Oil profits are up. Coal profits have hit record highs globally. And much of the world wants energy. Billions of people want energy, more energy, reliable energy, affordable energy, abundant energy. IRA is helping the clean energy group, yes.
Okay.
But the other sectors are not sitting on the sidelines, sitting there saying, oh, darn. Oh, well, game over. That's not what they're saying. And we just keep consuming more. The second part of your question is, if not the IRA, and the IRA is effective at producing more clean energy, then what? I think that's another conversation, right? There are people far better, more qualified than me to talk about what policies should we enact, because you need to, what are your goals, right? I do know that group at the Hoover Institute, George Shultz, et cetera, thought that carbon tax was the only way we were going to get to true decarbonization. If that's your goal, if that's your goal, right?
I wanted to see, since you've had a stake in this industry for quite some time now, I just wanted to see your thought process on how effective do you think the IRA will be, and what do you think will be needed in the future? And that's okay. We don't have to touch upon like the future policies.
What will we need in the future? Let's take a stab at this, Kevin. Let's have a conversation. Probably some carrots, and we're not very, some sticks, and we're not very good about voluntarily accepting policy sticks. We like policy carrots. Cut my taxes. Don't raise my taxes. Mm-hmm. Let me drive whatever speed I want. Don't make me drive slower or use less that's an interesting one. We talk about sustainability, but we forget about conservation. Conservation, the act of using less, not more efficiently, but actually not using it. That was a big push in the 70s. It seems to have been forgotten. There's another phase to this whole transition if we want to decarbonize. There's a whole other phase, and it probably involves some sticks. And that would be probably a good topic for another.
The American Energy Society, do you guys work on trend spotting? And how do you report on trends?
The way we do it is it's data informed, but not data driven. A data driven trend spotting isn't entirely reliable. You're not taking it into context. How is that phrase used? If you're just counting words, it ignores context. So we actually spend a lot of time trying to understand, which publication we're seeing in it, because not all publications, not all podcasts, not all webinars, they're all not all created equal, right? So what was the source? Who was the source? When was the source? In what context was it used? Why was it used? That sort of thing. So we really break it down. And then we also layer in the data side. How often was it used? That sort of thing. Distribution, where was it used? We do get to see some trends, it's interesting because it's kind of like taking the pulse of a profession and how it's thinking about itself without even knowing it.
Right. Have you seen any trends within the IRA or the communication of the IRA? Or like headlines?
Communication, no, but we have seen the IRA has facilitated some interesting developments. And it's almost as if it has, for example, before the IRA, conversations about hydrogen were underdeveloped and somewhat immature. Hydrogen was going to be the be-all, end-all. It was almost alchemy, right? It was the end-all, be-all for everything. It was going to solve it. Too many people were thinking of hydrogen in that way. the IRA by creating certain incentives for certain subsectors within that industry, hydrogen industry, was able to highlight and privilege the more likely pathways where hydrogen could have an effect, such as industrial fuel, as opposed to as a source of fuel for cars. Great for fuel cells, not so great as a fuel itself. But there were people that were advocating that, right? We were going to go to a gas station and fill up on hydrogen. Bad idea. Bad idea. So the IRA has helped narrow the conversations to the about topics that we should be thinking about, as opposed to the broader kind of wishing and dreaming. And
last one. So was there any questions that you wish I would have asked you about the IRA and how the American Energy Society plays its role in communicating it? Or
I'll focus on the first part of your question. We don't get involved and we don't think about that and don't want to. We want to make sure everybody feels safe within the society, that their views are represented, right? So when we see a deficiency in a particular field, that's where we will recruit to make sure that there's a balanced voice. So we really go out of our way to avoid having a wish list, right? Having said that,
okay.
I think now would be the time to start thinking about looking ahead. Your questions are great. You ask some really good questions, tough ones. Good. Thank you. I like that. I'd probably now shift my gaze, and I'm not just saying this to you. I would say this to everybody. 2024 is going to be messy. Mm-hmm. The election is going to be messy. The Republicans will want to acquire more power than they have. The Democrats will also want to acquire more power and influence than they have, no doubt. I think we can tell already that many in the Republican Party are going to use the IRA, since that is the flagship for this administration, right? IRA. Right. They're going to criticize it. Will the Democrats rally around it, or will you have some splinter off? Who, why, where, that sort of thing. But also, I think, dive into what the Republican critics are saying, because what I'm seeing is a general critique of misuse of taxpayer money and fiscal irresponsibility, general, 30,000 feet. But when you dig into the local districts in Georgia, in Ohio, or Michigan, and say, well, what about this particular budgetary, contribution to your industry in your hometown for your constituent, I think you'll find consistent support. No, that one's fine. Manufacturing facilities for anodes and cathodes in my district is a great policy, but okay, the larger policy is not so good. So I would want to know how is it playing out? How is this 2024 campaign going to play out? And who's supporting what? And what are they? How are they criticizing? I dive into the language. I'd look ahead now. Okay. We've been looking back. How do we get that money? Mm-hmm. Right? That's how did we get that? What's it for? How do I get to it? How can I use it? How can it change? Help us with the transition. We've been thinking about the IRA because it's a monumental policy.
Yep.
I'd shift my gaze. 2024 said, I don't want this election to last a year and a half, but yeah, it's going to.
Mm-hmm.
I'd start looking now.
Headlines. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd start looking now. Florida. I mean, my goodness, were you here? Who knows? I mean, I know that there are people who are very loud critics of the IRA in Florida. But what about at the local level?
Okay.
I don't know.
I guess to end on a positive note, I really like the IRA has so many opportunities for small scale projects in communities, like small cities that have low budgets for these types of projects, but still want to go after a clean energy project in their county or city.
Yeah, and go take that to the extreme. Indigenous energy.
Right.
There's a lot of money for Native American communities and tribes finally some sort of economic incentive that extends beyond casinos. Yeah, right. No, that's a perfect example, right?
Yep.
How the IRA has said there are people who were left behind.
Mm-hmm.
How about them? No, you're absolutely right. It was, and let's not, a lot of incentive for regions that were built on manufacturing, yeah. Like Ohio, like Michigan, like Georgia, like North Carolina. And, you know, this was not Gavin, I think, look at who is criticizing. Look ahead, because the IRA was a boondoggle for clean tech. Sorry for the negative connotation. It was a boondoggle for clean tech, but it was not a boondoggle for a party that voted for it. That's interesting. That doesn't happen that often. I don't know, and I wish I did. California has the most representatives in the House because of its population, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's getting some of the I don't think it's getting a lot of IRA money per capita. So they voted for it, but they're not getting it.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting, there's a lot there. And I think you've got, you have a set of questions now for the IRA. Dig deeper. We all want to know. Look ahead. What's going to happen? Trendspot. Awesome. How about that? Trendspot yourself.
Okay.
And don't let it just be data driven. Take it into context. Who's saying what, right? Are they criticizing at the 30,000 foot level, or are they criticizing, I got $1 billion in my district? That's terrible. Nobody's saying that. Give me a break. Mm-hmm. Nobody's saying that. So I would trend spot the IRA looking ahead. I think that would be the question.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Eric. This has been a mind-boggling conversation. I feel like I have so many things turning, and this is, I hope this will be a great introduction episode to the series to get people's minds a little warmed up for what's to come, which actually includes a hydrogen focused episode. So I'll make sure to follow up on you on what's said in that episode. But would you like to share any websites or handles for the American Energy Society and how people can get in contact with you or the group?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, in a similar attempt to make sure that we are inclusive, I would encourage anyone and everyone, you can actually become a friend of the society for free and get all of our publications and some of the services. All of our-